And we're going to do this with our favorite virologist, Dr. Angela Rasmussen, who joins us right now. Good morning, Angela.
Good morning, Ursula. How you doing?
Good. Thank you so much for joining us. I got to tell you, I'm just looking at our text line and emails, and we are getting tons of questions. So the first thing that we're going to talk about is the vaccine for kids ages 5 to 11. Just this morning, the Biden administration released their plans for how they're going to roll out. The CDC is going to be meeting on November 2nd and 3rd to authorize emergency approval of the Pfizer vaccine. And within hours of that approval, vaccine for kids will start shipping out across the country. They'll be sent with smaller needles, a smaller dose, administered at schools, et cetera. First of all, in your opinion, is there enough clinical data to support safely approving emergency authorization for kids 5 to 11?
Well, there should be, because Pfizer and actually Moderna have both been conducting trials in those age groups over the past year, really. They've been conducting what's called an age de-escalation trial, which means that they started off in older kids, and as more and more older kids were enrolled in the study and were vaccinated with no problems, they moved down to progressively younger age groups. And now they have enough data from the 5 to 11-year-old age groups that they can say that in general, these vaccines have an acceptable safety profile. Now, trials like this are very difficult to assess two things. They're very difficult to assess effect or efficacy in that age group, because that age group is not normally, they don't get severe COVID at the same rate as adults. So really they have to look for potential correlates of immune protection, such as antibody responses and things like that. They also look at safety in terms of the most common side effects that would happen. Now, the only issue here is that extremely rare side effects can't really be looked at in clinical trials, because this is a few thousand kids within these age groups. And actually, they delayed this a little bit because the FDA said that they needed to increase the number of kids that they were enrolling to make sure that they were collecting adequate safety data. But they still won't be able to necessarily discover extremely rare side effects that might occur from the vaccine. So even after these vaccines are authorized and they meet the standard for authorization, you know, the kids who receive the vaccines will be looked at very closely. And I think that's one reason why they're planning to roll it out in places like pediatricians' offices, because then, you know, if a child does have an adverse reaction to the vaccine, they're right there in the clinic with their provider who can help manage that.
All right, Dr. Rasmussen, I got a lot of questions coming in from our listeners. This is about mammograms and COVID shots. They said that an article in the Seattle Times said the shots affect the lymph nodes right away, resulting possibly in false positives for mammograms. It is suggested waiting for 4 to 6 weeks after the shot before getting a mammogram. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think that sounds reasonable. Certainly the axial lymph nodes that are in the armpit, essentially, are lymph nodes that are important to look at for mammography, because certainly in metastatic breast cancer, that can be a site of metastasis because they are so close to the breast. When you get a vaccine, you are activating cells, lymphocytes, that are in those lymph nodes. That's what the B and T cells are. That the vaccine activates, and those cells will divide, and that makes your lymph node get larger. So that can look like a false positive on a mammogram. So yes, I agree with that advice. I'm not a breast health expert, but I do think that it sounds reasonable to wait 4 to 6 weeks to make sure that you're getting an accurate mammogram, because they are very, very important for cancer screening.
Another one here is Chris from Everett asks, if you have a child about to turn 12, should you wait to get them the adult version of the vaccine when they turn 12, or should they go ahead and get the vaccine for 5 to 11-year-olds?
You know, that's a good question. I guess it really depends. If they're turning 12 tomorrow, you know, or if they're turning 12, let's say on November 6th, a couple days after the vaccines for 5 to 11-year-olds are going to be authorized, I'd say just wait until they turn 12. But if it's going to be another 6 months, 9 months, if it's going to be a month, long time period, I would say get them vaccinated as soon as possible, because you definitely want your kids to be protected if they're going to school in person. And vaccinating them as soon as possible will also make it safer for them to do all the things that kids have really been missing doing, seeing their friends, seeing their family, playing sports, going to class, et cetera.
That is the similar question that we were getting from Jill, who's actually listening on satellite radio in Virginia. And she was also saying, should she get her child vaccinated as soon as possible or wait until she turns 12, which is all the way in December, and all the way. That's actually 2 months. Are you? Because she's worried that the dose would be larger if she waited until the child was 12.
Well, for a situation like this, and the vaccine's not going to be available until early November for kids, by the time the daughter turns 12, she may well be eligible for the adult size second shot. To be honest, I'm not sure how much it really matters. I think that you know, certainly dose can be important, but you know, really what's more important is getting more than one dose and the time interval between those doses. So I would still argue, if it were my kid, I mean, I can't give medical advice.
Sure.
I'm not a physician, but if it were my child, I would still opt to get them the first vaccine I could, regardless of the dose. And here's why, another reason why, you know, maybe dose matters, maybe it doesn't matter all that much. We still are learning about this, but I think a lot of people might be surprised to know that the Pfizer vaccine for adults is a 30 microgram dose, while the Moderna vaccine is 100 micrograms. So already the Moderna vaccine is three times the dose of the Pfizer vaccine. And both of those vaccines are treated equivalently in adults. So I'm not sure that it really matters that much.
Okay. This is a question from Kevin. He says, I am planning to get a flu shot and a booster. Do I need to wait a certain period of time to get my booster after getting the flu shot?
I don't think so. And in fact, I believe that people are recommending that you get boosters and the flu shot at the same visit, potentially. You can get the flu shot in one arm and the COVID shot in the other.
Speaking of flu shots, I got my flu shot this past weekend, and I didn't have you or Ursula with me, and I'm telling you, it hurt without you.
I'm so proud of you, G, though. I know how reluctant you were to get the flu shot, and I know that, you know, this is a real thing. A lot of people really struggle with getting injections. People have fear of needles. People don't like to go through the pain, and people sometimes can find them to be extremely painful and extremely anxiety inducing. And I'm really proud of you, G, for getting the flu shot anyways. That's wonderful to hear.
I just did it so I could go on the show and hear you say that. So here's a here's another question. They asked for you. My wife has a unique situation that she had one vaccination shot and then got COVID, a pretty bad case of it, and is now recovering. But she had the monoclonal antibody treatment. How long does she have to wait till she gets the second vaccination shot? And can she get a flu shot?
I'd say definitely consult with the provider. But I believe that the recommendations are 6 to 8 weeks after monoclonal antibody infusion. And the reason for that is that monoclonal antibodies can actually hang around for a long time. And those monoclonal antibodies are directed towards the spike protein, which is what the vaccine is allowing you to make and develop immune responses to. If those antibodies are there binding and getting rid of the spike protein that your vaccine is making, that vaccine is not going to be as effective. So you want to definitely check with her doctor, but probably wait 6 to 8 weeks after the monoclonal antibody infusion. Now, those monoclonal antibodies are specific for SARS coronavirus 2, so that won't have an impact on your flu shot. I'd still check with your provider just to be sure what the recommendations are for you. But monoclonal antibodies for SARS coronavirus 2 should not affect your flu shot.
I'm going to read you a statement, and I want you to react to it. And it's also a question that Bob and Roy is presenting this morning. And this was a statement actually made by my fill-in co-host this week, Dres, who said, getting the vaccine is about protecting himself, not anyone else. You can just as easily spread COVID whether you've been vaccinated or not. So the question that Bob and Roy is posing, and I think it's similar to what Dre's was mentioning, is that if the vaccine doesn't prevent you from getting COVID and doesn't stop you from spreading it, how is this pandemic ever going to end?
So that's true and that isn't. So, yeah, the vaccine can't protect you 100% of the time from getting a breakthrough infection. But it can seriously reduce the likelihood that you're going to be infected. So I don't agree that you only get vaccinated for individual reasons at all, because when everybody in the population is vaccinated, everybody has this reduced risk of infection. That means that population-wide, there's going to be fewer infections, and that means that transmission is going to be curbed. Now, this really does depend, though, on everybody getting vaccinated. Now, if you look at something like the inactivated polio vaccine that was developed by Jonas Salk in the 1950s, that doesn't produce sterilizing immunity either. It doesn't protect you from being infected with polio. But within 10 years of that vaccine becoming available, there were almost no cases of paralytic poliomyelitis in the entire U.S. And that's because that even vaccines that don't completely protect against infection but do provide protection against disease are very, very good at reducing transmission at the population level. So I would argue that while the individual benefits of vaccination are tremendous and wonderful, and they should all encourage us individually to get vaccinated, the true power of vaccines is really at the population level. If everybody is an inhospitable environment for the virus to set up shop in, the virus isn't going to be able to establish itself in that community. So I would respectfully disagree that the only reason to get vaccinated is because of yourself. Vaccines do reduce transmission in the community, even though they don't completely prevent it. And if enough people are vaccinated, they can completely obliterate, essentially, transmission in the community.
Here's another one, Dr. Rasmussen. Should those of us, by the way, I'm kind of asking for myself too, should those of us who are at 8 months or longer after getting their second dose of vaccine, whether it's Pfizer or Moderna, should they be concerned now that they need the booster?
So yes and no. So what we've seen in the data, and this is, I think, what is so confusing for so many people, is that, yes, effectiveness overall appears to decrease after 6 to 8 months, especially with Pfizer. And now it also looks like, especially with J&J, but for all of the vaccines. And this isn't a tremendously huge surprise. That's how the immune system works. You will mount responses upon exposure. That's your second shot. And then those responses will wane over time. Now, it doesn't mean that your immune system's completely forgotten about it, but it may mean that people are more vulnerable to getting a breakthrough infection. Now, for most people who don't have other pre-existing conditions, who aren't immunocompromised, who aren't older, and aren't high risk for getting severe COVID, that's not as big of a deal because they are less likely to go to the hospital or become very ill or die. And the data really does show that the vaccines are not as protective as they once were this far out against cases of COVID, but they're still very protective against hospitalization and death. Now, that's cold comfort, of course, to the people who are getting really sick, who are vulnerable and who are high risk. And that's why boosters have been recommended for those people. I imagine that as we go forward and we have more supplies globally of these vaccines, there probably will be a booster recommendation for everybody. But for right now, that's not needed. Now, that said, I think that if you do think that you are high risk for COVID, because maybe you have asthma, maybe you have diabetes, maybe you have somebody vulnerable who lives in your household, I think that those are all good reasons to maybe consider getting a booster. So I would definitely, if you're in that situation, I would definitely talk to my provider about it. And for everybody, and this includes myself, and I've been vaccinated with Johnson & Johnson and two shots of Pfizer here in Canada, continue to wear masks in public places, continue to use caution in interactions with people outside of your household, particularly if you have people in your household who are in high-risk environments, such as children who are unvaccinated going to school, continue to use precautions on top of vaccination, because we really can start relaxing these restrictions, not only when more people get vaccinated, but also when there's less transmission in the community. So if we do all we can now to get immunization up and community prevalence down, that means the sooner than later, we can start relaxing requirements to wear masks and things like that.
Dr. Rasmussen, we have 30 seconds. The FDA is expected to approve mix and match vaccine boosters. Is there a best shot to get for a booster?
Let me write this down.
I don't think so. I think for a booster, you should get the first shot that is available to you. For most people, that's probably going to be one of the mRNA vaccines. There's still very little data on if there's an ideal or optimal order for mixing and matching, but the data that we do have suggests that mix and match is just fine, it's safe, and it works. So I would suggest that if you are eligible for a booster, or if you got Johnson & Johnson, go and get the first booster shot that's offered to you, whether that's an mRNA vaccine or the J&J shot. It's probably, though, because of supplies, going to be the mRNA vaccines. And like I said, I did it. My side effects were worse with the Johnson & Johnson shot than with the two Pfizer shots that I had afterwards. Basically, I had a sore arm. So highly recommend mix and matching vaccines, especially if you've only had one dose of Johnson & Johnson. But a lot of data, including here in Canada and in the UK, suggests that it's very safe and it works just fine.
Thank you, Dr. Rasmussen. Really appreciate your time. Thank you for doing this. You've been with us since April of 2020. It's been a blessing. Thank you, and tell Taz hello.
Thanks so much, G. It's a real privilege to talk to you guys.
All right.